All right, and as promised, we are live right now with Representative Edgemond. He is on the phone, and we're going to talk to him today about the upcoming or the current legislative cycle. Representative Edgemond, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning. Pleased to be on your show.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you so much for coming on. We really do appreciate it. I know your time is strapped, so we won't take too much of it, but we really appreciate you coming on, helping us understand what's happening this legislative cycle.
Yes, there's as we enter into the third week down here, a lot going on, but a bigger part of the discussion is focused on the budget and how to tackle a huge deficit and really sort of a permanent loss of oil revenue.
Yeah, and I know the same question as last year, and then just seeing this up this year and how oil has continued just to spiral down, and there's questions about when is it ever going to hit that bottom and how that's going to affect the budget, because I know that they budgeted for $40 a barrel this year.
No, we actually budgeted for $56 a barrel of oil.
Even better. Well, with that budget framework in mind, obviously for our region, there's a couple of priorities that we wanted to ask you about, just so we can understand, you know, where is this going to fall in? Because, you know, there's a lot of different ways of viewing how to approach the budget. You know, some feel that slashing expenses to a great degree is the solution. Some feel that there's other new revenue sources. And I wanted to ask you particularly about three things. First, two of them are kind of services that really impact our community. And the second, or the third, I mean, is going to be the permanent fund and how there is a proposal to turn that into a sovereign wealth fund. So if you don't mind me just asking you about the ferry system and fish and game, first with the ferry, how do you see this with the future budget? What's the direction that people are going in for the ferry for our region in particular?
Well, the Southwest service for the ferry system is a critical priority for me. We did meet, as coincidence would have it, we did meet with the Aleutians East Borough folks about an hour and a half ago, and we talked about how the summer run has essentially been cut from ten landings to eight, which is a reduction of two. The challenges facing the ferry system, number one, is that it doesn't pay for itself, and number two, it's about almost 45% of all the state funding that goes in the Department of Transportation. So it's a big, inviting target. And our task in the House Bush Caucus, as well as all the coastal legislators in Alaska, is to articulate just how important the ferry system is. And if it needs to be trimmed back like other state services and programs, then do it in a way that's not sort of cutting the bottom out from underneath it. Last year, the ferry system as a whole took about $11 million hit. And there's some in the legislature who want to do that or more this session. So I guess I'll just close by saying it's definitely on my radar and in a big way, and going to be one of the bigger priorities we'll focus on throughout the rest of the session.
Yeah, because especially for the Southwest region, there's talk of needing a new ferry. The Tustamina is kind of on its last leg, and so it's kind of hard to find, I would imagine, the money in the budget to build a brand new ferry for the region, let alone keep all the landings going.
Well, that's exactly right, and the trusty Tusty is actually in better shape vis-a-vis the Taku and some of the others that have all been around since 55 some years ago, early 60s. I guess just a word to everyone within the listening audience that this is a very important issue. I've been working with Representative Munoz from Juneau, Representative Ortez from Ketchikan, Representative Seaton from Homer, Representative Stutes from Kodiak, and others. In fact, we'll be talking about the ferries later on today in a group discussion. And so it's first and foremost on a lot of people's minds down here in Juneau.
Well, that's really good to hear, and we appreciate you putting that focus onto it, because it is just a lifeline for so many out here in the Aleutians East, and we're fortunate to have it in our region. Lots of people, the Bering areas, don't have this opportunity, so we are thankful for it and definitely appreciate you putting that on your list of things to do. With fish and game, You know, there was all this money that was put into a project for king salmon, and then, of course, last year that got hit, and then, ironically enough, last year during the salmon season, we had a large number of kings get harvested in our region, and there was absolutely no funding to do any biological research on it, and so it kind of just slipped through the cracks. What does the Fish and Game Department look like right now in the, with the upcoming budget discussion? Is that even open for the chopping block? Because it was last time, but, I mean, it's such an essential service.
Well, unfortunately, not to be blasé about this, but everything is on the chopping block with such a huge deficit. More specifically about the Department of Fish and Game, the budget process is just getting underway down here, and the budget subcommittees, as they're called, for each agency are just beginning their hearing process. And I think, as everybody probably knows well within the region, that the Comfish Division makes up the largest sort of pot of state funds within the department, and it's always the biggest target. I guess I draw an analogy to the ferry system in that regard. But, again, it's something that we watch and track very closely. And we work, and I spoke with Commissioner Sam Cotton not too long ago, and be talking with him regularly as time goes on, and certainly other colleagues up and down the coast focusing on, again, whatever reductions that need to take place, need to, you know, be more in the administrative or in the supervisory area and not at the ground level where the services actually take place. And I know that's awful general and pretty generic comments, but, you know, it really is just our lifeline, our lifeblood is the Department of Fish and Game out in Bush, Alaska, particularly in the Aleutians East Borough area. And, you know, something we think about and focus on every day down here.
Yeah, because I can understand how you would, you know, the extra funding for extra projects. I believe Governor Parnell was the one that earmarked the salmon for king salmon. You know, you can understand how these projects that kind of came on before the major oil crisis occurred could get trimmed away. But some of the service, just having a building open with two biologists and then some interns, you know, and then people watching the Weir, is that kind of stuff that people are willing to examine? I know that you said that everything has to be on a block, but would even things like that be open for, would they consider maybe going to electronic monitoring systems as opposed to, you know, people?
You know, I think every agency is looking at all of its IT functions, and they're looking at the cost of personnel, and they're looking at delivering services for more centralized locations like Anchorage or Kodiak or wherever it might be in the state. And our charge, you know, in rural Alaska, and I just sort of say that in the larger sense, is that, you know, for us to put our hand up and say, whoa, wait a minute. You know exactly what the true impact of that budget reduction is and what it means to being able to properly manage a fishery or to make sure that things are tallied correctly. And it's a big task this year because, not to be redundant, but you know, we're facing an almost $4 billion deficit. And thankfully, we have savings. We do have a larger permanent fund that we'll be talking about here in a moment in terms of being able to draw on the earnings. So we can work our way through this. But in the meantime, we cannot cut our way to prosperity, and particularly on the back of the commercial fishing industry.
Absolutely. Or on the back of education, for that matter. And out here, you know, the talk of raising the limit to 25 or 20 students as opposed to 10 for funding, where that would affect two of our schools directly and more without the throughout your district. And is there still talk about doing that? I mean, it would only save like $6 or $7 million, but it would affect 60 villages?
Well, it was loose talk to begin with.
Okay.
It essentially came from one or two legislators from the Mat-Su Valley. But this whole thing has spread like fire. I was just talking to a large group, the Alaska Native Tribal Health Board, and this subject came up about three or four times.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I can tell you that even if a bill were to be introduced this session, we'll beat it back.
Okay.
There's no chance of it passing. It's not going to happen this year. The bigger concern, though, is that it's the tip of the spear, because there is going to be focus on turning back K through 12 funds and you know, the money that our schools in general get. And I guess I would say, back to the small schools enrollment issue, I wrote an op-ed along with Senator Hoffman and a couple other rural legislators, and that was well received, and we got a lot of feedback on it. And I think it basically put that issue to rest here in the legislature for this session, because if that bill comes forward, we're going to stop it cold, and there just isn't support for it.
Yeah, it didn't feel like there was, and it almost felt like it was a direct attack on the rural communities to kind of almost just put to death these villages and bring everyone into the urban areas. I know that's kind of a dramatic way of saying it, but it almost just felt like that since there was so little return on the cost of it. So the future of the permanent fund, as you said, you know, potential for revenue with that. You know, a lot of people, this has been typically a political suicide to discuss transforming the permanent fund into revenue for the government. It was the money you set aside for the people, and there's an understanding that it, you know, tying it to some other savings accounts and putting it into a sovereign wealth fund, as it were, and would be an option to create revenue. Do you think it would be two questions, you know, just, you know, your thoughts on that prospect in general, and then what about a viability of taxing an increased tax for an X amount of time, keeping the money with the people and then taxing it until we get through to another time, and then maybe you see another boom in oil and then another sovereign wealth fund could be created afterwards?
A lot to respond to there. I'll try to be specific in my comments. First off, as the chairman of the House Bush Caucus and somebody born and raised in Bush, Alaska, somebody who's been in this business here in Juneau for a number of years, everything I do is to protect small communities. That's my first charge. And when I look at proposals to take the permanent fund dividend and essentially cut it in half and then to use that money to fund a government, naturally I'm concerned about it. The larger challenge and what the more sobering sort of issue out there is we really have nowhere else to turn in terms of replacing the drop in oil revenue, which is now widely acknowledged as permanent in nature, but we have nowhere else to turn but the earnings from the permanent fund itself. And it may, unfortunately, and I'm not very eager to acknowledge this reality, but I think it's fairly true, that in the long run, if we don't take some of those earnings from the permanent fund itself, whether it's a sovereign wealth fund or whatever vehicle it might be, but we don't take those earnings and use them to supplant the loss in oil revenues, we may not have a dividend down the road, number one, and number two, we may be seeing a huge drop in core services like K-12 and everything else that our smaller communities are dependent on. So this session, I don't know if we're going to approve the governor's package. I don't know if we're going to cut the dividend. I don't know what's going to happen here on out, but I can tell you this, that whatever I do is going to be predicated on serving our smaller communities the best. And I'd also like to say I welcome input. If anybody in the listening audience has any comments, any sort of preferred way to do all this, we have a toll-free number, and we send out an electronic newsletter every Friday. We try to, keep in touch, and we want others to let us know what they're thinking on the whole thing.
Yeah, I read your newsletter quite often. I really appreciate it. I saw that the permanent fund was a topic there. Can I just ask you really quickly why you feel like the permanent fund is the only place to turn? Could there not be taxation or other revenue streams that could be effective in raising and closing the budget?
No, and I'm just going to jump right in, and I'll try to put this in perspective. Picture a $5 billion a year state budget, and oil revenues right now in the 20s are bringing in about $1 billion. You got a $4 billion or plus gap. All the other taxes, fishing, mining, alcohol, cruise ship tax, tobacco, all that combined, maybe bring in $500 million at best. And so you still got about a $3.5 billion deficit. So we've got about $16 billion all total in savings, everywhere that the state has savings accounts. But we're going to be drawing that down, probably about $4 billion this year. We'll be down to 12, and then draw another 4 down the next year, and then so on and so forth. There is no other source of revenue out there other than probably the earnings from a permanent fund, which has hovered around $50 billion. So the misconception that we can go out and tax our way to a balanced budget, or that we can even cut our way to a balanced budget, is it's erroneous. It's not true. And so these are some of the tough choices that we're all having to make. And I can tell you, in an election year down here, and in a legislature that is not had to have, make any difficult choices about taxes for many, many years, it's about as tricky of a political environment as you could conjure up. And hopefully that creates a little more information for you there.
Absolutely. You know, it's caused a lot, it sparked a lot of good conversation in our office, and I wanted to get your official thoughts about it. And because there is no easy solution, this cycle, and it's a really tough environment to be. I don't envy your position, and I understand that, all things have to be looked at. And I know you got to go. You have a meeting coming up here in just a minute with the governor, I was told. But I have to ask you, last year you were so instrumental in keeping public broadcasting funded here in the state. The governor proposed 27% cut to radio, an 18% cut to the system in general. Some would say that's a bit, an attack on radio. I understand. I personally think it was kind of a reasonable cut, but I don't think 27% is anywhere near what we're going to end up seeing. Is there a lot of public broadcasting is a very easy target? It's not very much money, but it's easy kind of to target. Do you see a potential? You guys had a good bargaining chip with a 2/3 majority last year needed to access the funds. Is that a potential this year? Do you guys have a bargaining chip in the legislature, or are things like public broadcasting going to be easily chopped without that?
Well, I'd like to first thank you for your acknowledging the role. It was my amendment that restored most of the public broadcasting funds, and that did carry through to the end of the budgeting process. What I'm hearing thus far is that because largely in a large way, the work that we did last year, it wasn't just my office, it was many others, but we did help educate a lot of legislators about the importance of regional radio stations and the public broadcasting system in Alaska. So it's still early in the process, but I'm being told that the focus is going to be more on, if there's budget reductions, to be on the TV side and less on the radio side. We'll see how all that carries out. Very difficult to promise something in this environment down here, but that's what I'm hearing thus far. And in terms of the leverage, it's a 3/4 vote in order to tap into the constitutional budget reserve. That requirement is still, going to be utilized or still be required this session. And who knows? Public broadcasting might once again be in the mix.
Yeah, no, everything's got to be on the table, as you said before, and I know that the showing from last year with the public broadcasting to educate the legislators was pretty tremendous, and some advocates like you and Sitka and other communities really made a big difference, and so we really do appreciate that, and thank you for your continued support. These are services that make a huge difference out here.
So, well, I really appreciate you bringing that up, and again, if I might, our toll-free number here in Juneau is 1-800-898-4451. And if people want to use their GCI cell phone, it's 465-4451. But we really appreciate input. Had a great visit this morning with Mayor Stanley Mack and others from the borough. And want to keep in close touch with as many people as possible because, to be entirely repetitive here, the decisions we're facing here are unlike any I have seen in my 10 years as a legislator.
Yeah, probably considerably not like anything that's seen in the state's history in some regards. Well, thank you so much, Representative Edgman. I cannot thank you enough for your time. I will not hold you any longer, but we'll make sure people have that number to call in to kind of give you the feedback. I know that that's really makes a difference when you're making your decisions. So again, thank you so much for everything and for your time.
You bet, and thank you for the great questions, and look forward to the next time we get to chat.
Absolutely. We'll give you a call as the session goes along or comes to an end so we can talk about it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Have a good day then. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye.